Brandon Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Julian Council producing. My name is Braden Gall. The voice you're about to hear will not be Jason Fitz's voice, but it will be a voice you recognize on these here airwaves on 102.5 The Game. Hal Gill in studio for 4 hours. Hal, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are really excited to have you here. Obviously, you can hear him alongside Pete Weber every single Predators game here, of course, on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A big one coming up Saturday night against the Penguins. I can't imagine. Probably like a just sort of like a mellow, chill atmosphere at Bridgestone on Saturday night. Probably not a big deal.
Has that ever happened?
Exactly. Exactly. So great to have you, man. Really, really, really cool to have you in studio. We've got a really big show planned for everybody today. Ryan Leaf going to join us in studio. Obviously, a guy that if you've read and followed his story, an incredibly interesting guy. I've had a chance to get to know him and work with him, and he is a fascinating individual. Looking forward to talking with him and telling his story. He's talking to a lot of high school kids around the area in Middle Tennessee and Northern Alabama. Excited to talk to him about that and also just some college football. Guy is really, really cool. Just became a father and is a very, very interesting dude. We'll talk with him. Steve Cavendish, of course, always, as always on Thursday, going to join us. He was at the Metro Council vote on Tuesday night for the MLS stadium. Also talk a little Preds and get some critics picks. Josh Ward going to join us from WNML as usual, and Coffee with the Coach coming up in the second hour. Dan Muse going to join us from the Nashville Predators. So they've got a little bit of downtime. And I wanted to ask you, Hal, and get started here today because of the situation we're facing on Saturday. It's just another game. It's just 1 out of 82. It's just 2 points, but it won't be like that for the fans. And I imagine it won't be like that for the players as they rematch with the team that not only ended their season in a championship format, but also ended their season on their ice in a championship format. I don't know what you take away from that situation and how you control your – like, how do you control your emotions on Saturday night and make it just another game, or do you not want to do that at all?
Well, I think every game's got a story. It doesn't matter whether it's middle of season, late in the season. You know, right now, every point matters, and you play all that. You know, every game is a big game. But this one still stings, I think. I think that's the fun part of sports, is that you have that team that came on your ice and won and took everything from you. I mean, the Preds worked so hard last year to get to where they were and to have it stripped away on home ice, and that's a tough pill to swallow. And so then I think in the end, if they can come out and compete hard, it's going to feel good to beat these guys.
You also are uniquely qualified to talk about what takes place in a locker room when you lose a Stanley Cup championship. Yeah. And you lose in a final. You, of course, were on the team with Sid the Kid and those guys that lost the year before. They go on to win the Stanley Cup. And this is exactly what this franchise is going through right now after losing and getting so close. And you literally get to watch the trophy presented on your ice. You go farther than you've ever gone as a franchise, and you get to the Stanley Cup final. We saw what happened with the city and the outpouring, just unbelievable. What is it that a team, I'm sure it may be different on each level, a team, a coaching staff, and obviously Lavi has been to the Cup final before last year, but a team and a franchise or a player even, what is it that you can learn and take from that experience and that can help you the next year, because the Penguins came back and won the Cup the very next year?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, there was a photo, an ad that they ran on TV where they had the bench, the Pittsburgh Penguins bench after we lost, and Sidney Crosby was frozen there, and he became unfrozen and stood back and looked at that moment after they lost and said, "I'm never going to let this happen again." And then he rejoined the frozen picture, and it was a great ad because it was very telling of how that situation goes. You know, you lose that game and you're just staring, and all you can think is, this will never happen again. I will never let this happen again. And I think for some people, I remember when I lost, my father said, "Geez, that'll never happen. You'll never get there again." I was like, "Dad, what are you talking
about?" Thanks a lot, Dad.
Thanks, man. But in all reality, you don't realize it's hard to get to that point. And so I was of the thought that I'm going to do whatever it takes to get back to that point. Because whether you win or lose, to make that run is so, you saw how much fun that was. I mean, the city's going nuts. The crowd every night was just insane out onto Broadway. I mean, what a city to do it in too. So you want to get back, you want to get that feeling back. And then of course you want to win. You want to raise the cup.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, Fitzy and I talked with Willie Donick, like, I want to say it was the 2 days, because I think it was a Sunday night, of course, it was game six, I think, and they hoisted the cup, and then we have Willie on every Wednesday, so 2 days later, we had talked to Willie, and we asked him, we said, we kind of were just talking about the run and what it meant, and you know, what is it like to get back, and he said something that kind of has stuck with me through this whole process that I find very interesting because of the experience of what took place last summer, and that was that, you know, even if they go and win it, whenever it is, let's say it's next year or 3 years from now or 8 years from now, whenever it may be, if they win a cup, comparing that run with what took place last summer or this summer, I should say, it's still, even if you win the championship, it still might not be the same as that first ever run. And he goes, we'd be lucky to have to make that comparison because that means we'll have a cup championship to talk about. But it is an interesting thought that this first time meant so much to the city and to the fans that I'm not sure anything will ever match that. Now, I'd like to see what a cup championship parade looks like and have the opportunity to make those comparisons. But there is this, and I think you saw it, and I saw it, you know, when they announced Yossi as the captain, I was there, and I talked to Forsberg and Yossi and these guys, and there's very much a we have done nothing element from this locker room, I think. I think that's the vibe I picked up from them is we've accomplished nothing.
You said it, we, because now you take Nick Bonino. Now you're getting Kyle Turris, Alexi Emelin, these new guys that have come in. There's new stories. And that's the best thing about the playoffs and the NHL playoffs, I think, are better than any other sport. I'm a little biased, I guess. But I think the NHL playoffs are so different. Every round is like a different animal. You have to get through Anaheim. It was a crazy series. That was hard fought. St. Louis is a different, you know. And then you get to Pittsburgh, which is a different feel every time. There's another battle. And so you said it, this is a different team and it's a different aspect. People are at a different point in their life. Scott Hartnell, you know, every story, there's every player has a different story. So maybe it'll never be the same and you don't expect that. But the city may never feel the same way they did, but it'll be a different expectation level. Obviously there's more of an expectation now with Nashville. They love hockey. It's crazy. I was here 5 years ago. It wasn't like this.
Nope.
I mean, this is a hockey town and it's great to see, but now there's expectations. So of course everything changes, but that being said, it's still a great run and to put together something like that, it's special. I don't care what stage you are as a city, as a team, it's still something special.
And certainly, listen, you know, Sidney Crosby is one thing. We can say, hey, Sidney Crosby vowed to never let that happen again. He's Sidney Crosby. Like,
yeah.
He might be the best player on the planet. So it's easy to say that when you're that good. There are certainly plenty of players that are really, really good on this roster. So I'm not suggesting any of them are as good as Sidney Crosby, but there's some damn good hockey players on this team. There's no question. So aside from your father, you know, busting your chops and cutting you off at the knees, what was that offseason like for you personally? What was the process like, and how did that feel you?
Well, first of all, when you go through a run like that, you have so many injuries. I mean, everyone comes out and like, well, I played through this, I played through that. Obviously, Ryan Ellis played through a lot.
Right.
But everyone has bad groins, bad hips, whatever it is. To play that long.
It's too early in the morning to hear about your groin.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry. I don't want to tell you how I was pulling my groin everywhere. But, no, listen, I think that whole summer, I remember healing and then just being like, I got to get back to that. I mean, that's just the best feeling is winning a series in five and having like 4 or 5 days off before the next series. That was like
just bask in the glow.
It was just like, this is the best. I got time off and watching this, you're going to play against these guys and they're just beating each other to death. And you're like, I'm going to play against one of these teams. Going into a game sevens where you don't know what's going to happen. You might be done golfing tomorrow or you're going to live your
battle.
Dream.
Yeah.
It's like, it's such an awesome ride that it carries over into the summer. I was just driven by it.
Did you really, like, on a nightly basis during that run, sit down and watch every other game? Like, especially the teams that were in your bracket or whatever? Like, is that...
Well, you need to take time off. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, you're focused. It's funny because Jacques Martin was my coach in Montreal, and in the playoffs, he said, hey, this is a dream day. You know, in between games is a dream day. You just shut down and you, like, just float, man. Just cruise through today because tomorrow you're going to have to turn it back on and give everything you got. And so it was always funny that he called it a dream day, but it is. I mean, you take that time off, but it's hard to completely disengage. So, yeah, you're looking at other teams. You're saying, all right, if we get there, can we beat that? And usually, of course, you're saying, yeah, we can beat these guys. You know, we can, if we can get through this round, we can beat those guys.
Nobody in any sport should ever go into a game and be like, man, we're probably not going to win tonight.
Let's mail it in on this
one because
there's no point.
Hal Gill hanging out with us here, filling in for Jason Fitz, Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You mentioned Montreal, and I want to get to that because there's one player on this team that frankly, I will take the blame for. I'll stand up and put my hand in the air and say I'll be accountable that he's just been so good, we've sort of forgot to talk about it. And that is – they're like he's like the Alabama of the Predators. They're so damn good, we just don't talk about him. There's one guy, and I want to bring that up with Hal when we come back. We'll do that right here. Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is your flagship station for the reigning Western Conference champions, the Nashville Predators. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and like us on Facebook to keep up with all things in Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game, Instagram at The Game Nashville, Facebook.com/The Game Nashville. Hal Gill hanging out here, filling in for Jason Fitz, Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And I was asking you during the break, and we're going to hear from C-Mace because I want to get to a particular player that I am now calling the Alabama of the Nashville Predators. You guys got a rivalry with the TV guys? You guys, you ever suit up and fire pucks on Chris Mason?
Just knuckles, blood. It's ugly. It's ugly. God, Willie Donick. Oh, Chris Mason. Yeah. No, we get along. We get along.
You're a lot taller than Chris Mason. I think you could take him if you guys ever had to drop the gloves.
He's a strong guy, though.
Bull in a china shop?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, I like that. All right, I want to talk about P.K. Subban, and you obviously have a very unique insight into the guy. You know him personally, played with him a little bit. So P.K. Obviously having an outstanding season. This was Chris Mason earlier this week, kind of addressing the way P.K. Subban has played this year.
I think obviously, you know, he's really adapted and just embraced everything about Nashville, the system. But I think on the ice, he's really reeled it in. I think when he first got here, he was you know, trying to make a lot of flashy plays. And I think sometimes didn't necessarily weigh the risk reward of it. But I think now he is just, he's just locked in. He seems like such a mature player compared to, you know, a few years ago. And you're putting him out against other teams' top lines and he's shutting them down and he's still, you know, almost at a point a game. So he's really getting it done on both sides of the puck. It seems to me he just really figured out and understands the game of hockey and when to make those plays and when to take chances and when not to.
That was Chris Mason earlier this week kind of talking about how PK has evolved from the trade last summer through the injury, through the first season, obviously through a deep playoff run. We all know this guy's a Norris Trophy candidate, that he's one of the best defensemen on the planet. This is why I love having you in here, Hal, because, you know, I grew up playing hockey, but I'm not – I don't consider myself an expert. You have seen this stuff, and you know him personally. First of all, I've never seen – there's very few people that I think are more comfortable in their own zone with no help handling the puck in one-on-one situations. Like, he just can – with one hand on the stick.
Strong.
He just can body you up, and you're not going to get the puck from him. Tuesday night aside. But I do think it took him a long time, for whatever reason, to sort of find the groove or get on a roll or whatever cliche you want to use. But he has played next level hockey this year as compared to last year, and you don't think he's even hit the top of his game yet.
Yeah, I don't think he's played as well as he can. I see times where he's very good at self assessment and he'll, I, you know, that wasn't good, this was good. So he's always working on his game, but it's different. So he came from Montreal. You have to know where he came from. He came from Montreal, where I mean, this is a different beast. Like, he was 22,000 people chanting his name, PK, PK, every time he touched the puck. And so he's my partner, and he's doing spinoramas for no reason in middle of the ice. And I'd get off, we go to the bench in between shifts, and I go, PK, what was with the spinorama? Like, just move the puck. And he'd be like, well, oh yeah, you know, I was just trying to do that, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, we don't need to do that. But when you're 22 years old, 21 years old, and you got 22,000 people screaming your name,
you feel like you got to do something.
You
got
to do something.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you think he'd come to Nashville, and the natural thought is that, all right, he's going to get to Nashville and just unleash and just go nuts. And then he came to Nashville, and he could just, I mean, everyone loves what he does, but it's not this pandemonium about PK, PK, you know. So then he can just go do it. Everyone loves watching him, and he just does his thing. And then I think he fell into, and it goes a lot with Ekholm and Josi and Ellis that were so solid. He didn't feel like he had to do everything. And so he came to this team, the Predators, and
when you play with scrubs like Hal Gill, I mean, you gotta
do
more.
Hey,
right?
Let's be honest. I told him, I said, you gotta, you know, I mean, some shifts, I'd say, PK, we need some spinorama, we need something here because it's not coming from me, you know. And so I'd pump him up that way too, you know, like, but you know, when he's here, he's just playing his game, and man, he's like last year, he was so strong, and he's. He's one of the most powerful players in the NHL anyway. And when he plays a simple, strong game, he's so dominant. Defensive zone, neutral zone, he's great. But now he's adding to that on the power play. He's adding to the points and setting up guys. He's making plays when it's the right time. And that's the balance. And as you get older as a defenseman, you have to find out when – You know, we watched Sam Girard, sad to see him leave, but he's doing spinoramas all the time. That's the way he was playing. And then he's going to learn his game. He's going to go to Colorado to play a ton, I assume, and learn his game. PK is learning his game, and he's going to, for the rest of his career, he's going to be adapting and changing. But he's just so solid, and I think he's got better hockey ahead of him. I don't think he's done.
That's crazy to think about because he's already second on the team in points and one of the best defensemen on the planet, and there's another level potentially for him. Was it against the Kings that Sam Girard had the spin at center ice, and then he finds Goudreau on the left wing?
Yeah.
And you're just like, how the hell did he do that? 19-year-old kid. Anyway, the total total aside.
No,
there,
but it's –
That reminded
it's,
me
yeah,
of that.
No, it's good. I mean, those are – that's the whole thing is that you're looking for those big plays – But you're also, you know, because I'm a grizzled old man now, and I just want a steady defenseman to make some solid breakout passes, you know. And that's what he's doing now really well that he didn't do before. He's always good, but he's making those easy plays, and he's contributing offensively as well.
This is a guy who will go do, like, 500-pound deadlifts after a game. Like, I don't – like, what is it about him? And I think part of your thought process on the – when he came to Nashville, he could just sort of play his game. Part of that's because this city – and you were at the CMAs last night, and there's just stars everywhere. And I think part of this thing that makes this city interesting is that we leave people alone, sort of. Yep. Like, if you're Marcus Mariota walking down the street, people are just not going to really bother. You may have a couple people come up and say, hey, you know, we love you or whatever. But, like, you're not – If you see Nicole Kidman sitting at a Starbucks in Green Hills, you're not going to bother her. It's just sort of how we handle things in this city because we're used to seeing those types of people walk around. And I wonder if that gives PK more comfort. Give us an insight into the psyche, though, the person, who he is, because you hear stories about him going and working out after. Like, you just played a whole hockey game, and you're going to go do a leg workout? Like,
yeah,
is that normal?
I think that's everyone now. Okay. I guess – My first 3 years, it was some people did it, you know, and then now everyone's, you know, that's the only time you can lift. And it's such a tight competitive edge. If you slip, you know, if you get, you lose that edge, you got to stay on it. And PK is one of those guys that he's, like I said, so powerful. And he's powerful because he maintains that. And guys that don't maintain that end up, you know, You lose a little slip can cost a lot. So anyway, but you brought up a great point because when I got traded to Nashville, it was so coming from Montreal, man, it was different. Like Montreal, you know, my kids used to get mad at me because if I went to the park with them, I'd sign one autograph and it would be a line. Everyone would just gather to just get autographs. I'm like, ah, oh, sorry, kids, I'm not going to play with you this time either. In Nashville, you go about your way and you do your business and people appreciate you. That's the best part is, you know, you'd be at a restaurant and you'd be like, ah, no one noticed me. That's great. You know, and then you walk out and five people would say, hey, good luck tomorrow. And you'd be like, wait, what? I didn't think anyone noticed me, right. You know? And so I think PK loves the fact that he can be PK and be the big guy and the persona that he has. It's amazing. I mean, when he walks into a room, you know, everyone knows it. He's just got that aura about him. And it's great that Nashville embraces it but doesn't smother it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's a really nice balance for a place for him to sort of flourish. Not that he wouldn't flourish anywhere. He would.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think there's a special situation. You know, timing is so important, as my wife always tells me. She never would have liked me had we met at a different time.
Ouch. But that hurts. I'm sorry, man. You need a hug?
Hey, no. We agree that we never would have liked each other had we met.
Yeah, no.
But timing is so important. And certainly the Preds run with the MLS stuff that's going on. That the timing of all this has sort of just been nice. And I think PK, with that star power and the marketability that he has, I think the NHL does a very poor job of marketing him personally. I think the NHL could do a better job of that.
Well, the NHL, you're getting into a whole nother thing because that's the whole NHL. I was in Columbus and I talked to James Wisniewski, who's he played with me in Montreal and then in Columbus. He's on the retired end of his life, his season. And, It's interesting talking to him. He goes, I can't believe that people are embracing PK now, because we wanted to squash it in Montreal. You know, we wanted to, hey, just fall in line, man. You know, like, you're not supposed to have an opinion on anything or be flashy or wear.
They know how marketing works?
Well, at the NHL, it was if you tried to market yourself, you got punched in the face. And shut up. What are you doing? I don't know. I just think it was a boys' club. It was, and it's changed. I think it's totally different now. And PK is a big reason why he's marketing and he's doing a lot of. I mean, he's out there. He's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And so there's
a lot of it's worth covering. It's great stuff with the kids and good things. Yeah,
and good things. Yeah, no, it's and that's what the NHL has to embrace is move forward with that and but it was. I think it was because. There's no other sport where you can, if you did something, you know, if you celebrated too much, someone would come and punch you in the face. You had to be ready for that.
And it's interesting because, you know, as a kid who grew up loving hockey and playing hockey, like I could live in Austin, Texas and love Pavel Bure. You know, nobody in this city right now has any idea what I just said. Like he was unbelievable, spectacular star. But I came from a hockey family with a dad who loved hockey, who grew up loving hockey. And I loved hockey growing up. And from Wisconsin and playing the sport, and so outside of that, if you know, my friends had no idea who Brian Leetch was or Mark Richter or any of these guys that I grew up loving, like they just didn't know that. And there's no reason that a kid in Florida right now shouldn't know who Connor McDavid is, or a kid in Texas shouldn't know who Austin Matthews is, or you know all these guys that are just these spectacular young talents. And PK Subban falls into that group, and the NHL's got to figure out a way to do a better job. And I think it's happening, like you said. I think it's happening.
They're coming.
So we'll get to it. All right, when we come back, speaking of a guy who is out there, a big personality, there was a Titans player who was very outspoken yesterday about the coverage that this particular Titans team is getting. We will get to that when we come back. Hal Gill hanging out here, filling in for Jason Fitz, Braden Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Julian Council producing, going old school today, spinning the hits.
Thursday morning house party.
Okay, I like that. I'm in on that.
I'm in.
If we can get some Sturgill in the house party, that'd be great. Peak troll last night by Sturgill Simpson, if you missed that, outside the CMAs. Taking donations for the ACLU out of his guitar case in front of Bridgestone Arena last night with his Grammy front and center. Awesome, awesome stuff last night from Sturgill. Hal Gill hanging out here filling in for Jason Fitz. Taylor Lewan, and we talked about this yesterday about the Tennessee Titans, and we've talked about it a lot. Have the Tennessee Titans earned the right to get coverage nationally yet. Have they earned the right? Are they a great team because they're figuring out ways to win and they're 5-3 and in first place? Or is this team a questionable team that just isn't really that good and we're not really sure how they are and what they're going to be? Taylor Lewan yesterday about the coverage from ESPN particularly, right? This is Taylor Lewan talking about that yesterday.
Don't even talk about us on ESPN. Like, don't even mention us. Don't talk about the tie-ins. Just leave us alone. And you know, when we hit the playoff run, hopefully, and do what we're supposed to do, then you can start talking about us in February. A win's a win. That doesn't matter. They don't put little things by, little asterisks by W's. It's just the W's a W.
Why do you think people overlook that, though?
Because, I don't know, because we're the Titans. And 2014, 2015, we won a total of 5 games.
Right.
Last year, we were 9-7 with a new coach. Probably thought it was a fluke, and who knows, with a young quarterback and a couple of tools here and there, you never know what's going to happen. But, I mean, I think this team's really coming together, and to be honest, like, we're all real good buddies.
There's Taylor Lewan talking a little bit about the coverage there. And I don't – listen, I don't – you're a professional athlete making millions of dollars. I don't know if like this extra motivation thing and disrespect card, I don't know if any of that actually works. I mean, you make millions of dollars to go do your job. But I do think that there is some element of every little edge counts. Do you think, first of all, Hal, do you think that the Titans are getting proper coverage nationally? Do you think they're overlooked? Do you think they deserve more coverage? I guess that's my first question.
Well, can we back it up? Like, what? I don't understand what he's looking for. I used to love it when no one would recognize it. You just do your thing. I mean, you go play football. That's and you just said we're a great group. You got everything going your way. You're first in the division. That's all great stuff. Why do you need the coverage? I don't know why you need the coverage. What are you looking for? I mean, I guess I'd go back to promotion and you want to market your tools and your players, but I don't know what the advantage is. I want to be the guy. I want to be the team that no one notices.
The underdog.
Then, I mean, that's the best thing to be as a team, as the underdog going in, and you're in the fight and you need to get some respect. And yeah, I'm a Patriots fan. That's I mean, nothing drives the Patriots more than someone saying they cheated or someone saying they did this wrong. No one likes Bill Belichick.
Well, what is it they always say about Tom Brady? Like,
Tom
says it. He goes, if I got drafted in the first round, I wouldn't have been as good as I was.
Yeah, you
got
to prove yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best part of playing the game. That's why my nickname is Skillsy, is because I have no skill. Like, that's why my nickname came from.
Where can people follow you on Twitter, by the way?
Skillsy75.
There you go.
So, but that's, you want to prove yourself. So, in a team atmosphere, that's even better because everyone's in there together. You're a close knit group, and it sounds like that's what they got. Now you want to go and prove it.
It's interesting because I, as a fan, I think there's two types of fans. I think there's a fan that is like the guy who likes to yell and scream and talk trash at everybody that my team's the best and is going to win every single game. And then there's the other guy as a fan. And then there's the other guy who I am more like, which is, I don't like being the favorite to win anything. I don't want my team being picked to win anything. I want to be picked to lose. I'm nervous about every game. I think we're going to lose every game. Like, I think there's two different types of fans. Like, when the Packers, I'm a Packers fan. When the Packers are a heavy favorite at home in the playoffs, I am scared out of my mind. When they're on the road against the Cowboys and they're an underdog, I'm like, hell yeah, bring it on. And that's just because I just feel more comfortable in that way. And there's not a right or wrong there. That's just sort of the way it is.
What's funny about what Taylor Lewan said was he answered his own question to why the media might not talk about him that much. They want to combine 5 games in 14 and 15 and then had a good season last season, where some people probably do feel like it was a fluke and they haven't really played well. I mean, at least looking at it optically in the last five and three starts. So, of course, people aren't going to talk about you positively.
And I think we live in a media world where, like, two things can't exist in your mind at the same time anymore. Like, everything's got to be, this is the only way it is.
Yeah.
Like, the truth of the matter is, the Titans should be happy at 5-3 and to be in first place, and that they have continued to win games in a season where anything can happen, and we've seen craziness every single weekend, and good teams are losing to bad teams, and all this nonsense. Like, a win is great in 2017 in the NFL. That can exist in your brain, and it can also exist in your brain that this Titans team may not be great enough to do much yet, and they still have to prove a lot. Like, those two things can both exist in your head, and the Titans can be both of them, but we don't live in that type of media world where everything in the media world has to be like, this is the way it is, and this can't be the way it is. It's only one thing or the other. Like, They're both true about the Titans.
And well, what in the last 8 years have they done to deserve any kind of national recognition?
Exactly. None. And
I can understand, like, you want to have a pat on the back because you're 5-3 and the franchise is actually headed in the right direction. But come on, dude. Let's get real.
But to Hal, to your point about wanting to sort of play that role and enjoying that part of like, hey, I relished that opportunity when I was in that situation. I think it's – and this is where I think Taylor Lewan is unique in this locker room. I think it's good for the Titans to feel disrespected. I think that helps the way they would play, even if it's just a fraction of a percent or whatever. But I think Taylor Lewan's job as the vocal leader on the offense is to sort of voice that displeasure. I'm okay with – again, I'm okay with both things existing, with Taylor saying – hey, there's a reason we don't get covered and da-da-da-da, but we deserve more recognition and all this stuff because he's the one who – everyone else – that takes away – everyone else can go about their business now because Taylor talks. And I think that's what Taylor's job is in part, not just being the star left tackle, but also to sort of, hey, put it on me. I'll take the coverage. I'll take the headline. I'll make the statement because that's my role on this team because I can handle it.
Yeah, that just seems – it seems weird to me. And I going back to what you said – a fan's perspective, a fan can say, hey, you got to talk about my team. A fan can say, like you said, a lot of fans say, the sky's falling. Oh, it's going to – and that's the beauty of being a fan because you have no say in what is going to happen. On the with all due respect, I guess when you're –
unless you're really rich in college.
When you come in 50, 100,000 strong or whatever it is, you can scream and yell and bring your team over the top. But talking, you can't do anything about it. That's what's odd to me is why he's bringing it up when he really should, that's an in the locker room speech, like, Ray Lewis, we get no respect and we're going to go out there, that's when you.
I think it's who he is. I think he takes things personally, but that's how he finds motivation. I just think it's sort of, he's that type of guy.
Yeah.
And the Titans don't really have a lot of those. I mean, Marcus Mariota is the best player on the most important player on the team. And he's really just going to kind of be a politician the whole time.
Yeah.
And so he's not that Jameis Winston.
So you think he's lighting a fire?
I think that's what
in his own team.
Well, and I don't think it's anything he wouldn't say to them directly. I don't think he's any different in front of the microphone than he is in the locker room. I think he's very authentic. You may not like the weird screaming on the sideline or whatever, or the extra personal foul penalty that he tends to get from time to time. But as Fitzy and I have talked about, it makes him sort of who he is as a player. And you need him to play like that. Like, he needs to be that fiery, sort of like pushing people around a little bit sometimes, little extra whistle stuff. He needs to be that guy. There's plenty of hockey players that I mean, look at the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Look at the Anaheim losing in the conference final Ducks.
They're still the Mighty Ducks. They always be the Mighty Ducks.
But that's some guys just play like that, and some guys just need to be like that. So it's very, very interesting. I thought Taylor.
It's a good point. I think that's a good point. Now you say that, maybe he's keeping his team honest, saying, hey, we're not getting any respect. Let's go out and work a little harder to get that respect.
Yep. I think that's a good point. I think that's absolutely what he does. And I think, frankly, this Titans team, part of the reason there's not a lot of national recognition, but part of the reason they don't get a lot of buzz locally is they don't have those types of personalities. And that's okay, but
Taylor, and they win 12-9 in overtime against the Browns.
And that's part
and
of
we
the problem.
And we actually watch the games. Like, the national media, they don't sit here and watch these games every week. We're watching a team that does not look all that impressive.
Right.
That game was 5-3 record.
That game was just – I mean, I try, you guys. I'm trying to watch.
Well, you're spoiled with Tommy, so it's fine. So we'll,
Tommy.
Here's what we'll do. I want to know who those players could be on the defense, because I've got a name I want to see take that role on defense, because we know Taylor and Delanie Walker are probably those two guys on offense. I want to do that when we come back. Hal Gill hanging out here, of course, on Braden and Fitz. We'll be right back doing that right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This speech is my recital. I think it's very funny. You're listening to The Game Nashville. Listening to Braden and Fitz at The Game Nashville studio. Brought to you by Wholesale Income Mount Juliet. Hal Gill. I just have movie road trip clips. Yeah, I just have road trip. I have that was at University of Tennessee, wasn't it? Or it wasn't at University of Tennessee, but it was supposed to be at the University of Tennessee, where they stop it and they have the college party at the fraternity house. I think that was that song, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's when he gets up, the little guy gets up and starts jamming.
Yeah, yeah, because it's your dog. It's okay, because it's your dog. Hal Gill hanging out here on Braden and Fitz. So I want to know, I love that Taylor Lewan plays that role on the offense. Occasionally it gets him into trouble. He gets a penalty or two. I want to get your thoughts on maybe what the defense can look like and who can play that role on the defense. My personal pick would be Kevin Byard. I've said this before. I think he plays with that same style of edge and attitude. I had a chance to get to know him last year during our pro player show on Monday nights, and just he has that sort of fire and that edge. And I think he's only 5 interceptions in his last 2 games. I think he's only growing into that vocal leadership role. I think it takes time, certainly, for a young player to do that. But I think Kevin Byard is a guy that really could develop into that sort of, hey, I'm going to drag my team into this next level of competition, whatever that may mean. You kind of need to have those guys, the rah-rah guys. Cody McLeod is that guy a lot of times for the Predators. I think you need to have that guy. And I think Kevin Byard would be my pick if I had to pick somebody to say, hey, who's going to develop into that on the defense?
Well, I think any – and so when I – my thought in sports in general is you need – every group has to have their vocal leader, their support staff, and like the – maybe the quiet leader. You know, there's different ways to lead, but you need to have someone that steps up. We were talking about Adoree Jackson being a younger guy and maybe stepping into that role. I just think someone – you need to have different levels of it. I don't think you can just count on one guy. I think it's got to be, especially on a defense, is a pack mentality. You know, you have to have that I'm going, you're going with me, and gang tackle, you know, like – and you have to have you have to be able to get fired up about it, but actually – follow each other with it, you know. So if you have too many voices, I think sometimes that's too much, you know.
And Jarrell Casey, I think, falls into that mold of like, I'm going to be more of a do as I do, not as I say type of guy. I think he's, you know, he's sort of a I don't want to say quiet leader because he's got a great personality, but he's not the guy that's like screaming and yelling at people. I mean, Wesley Woodyard occasionally can get like that. Brian Arakpo can occasionally get like that. Certainly, if you hear Brian Arakpo speak, you know exactly who's talking with that voice. I think you bring up a good name with Adoree, because I think he's the guy that coming out of high school, the number one thing about him coming out of high school, playing at USC, and then coming to the Titans, that dude is an ultra competitor, and all these guys are competitors, but that guy is just is a next level guy. Like, he every single play he wants to do and be dominant, and I think it's gonna because he's a little undersized, it's gonna take him some time, and he's only a rookie, so I don't expect that to happen this year. But I could see Adoree Jackson growing into that role because he's rarely out of position. I mean, the guy for being undersized is almost always where he needs to be when the football shows up. He doesn't always make the play, but he's ultra, ultra competitive.
Well, I'll ask you, because I don't know. I'm asking, is this defense legit? Can they win games?
They're allowing a lot more points this year, I think, than last year. But I think they've played better. Now, the problem is the schedule's been pretty bad lately. So you don't know if it's really the – I think you could point to, you know, Jacoby Brissett, and you could point to Cody Kessler, and you could point to Joe Flacco, and you can say those are the 3 quarterbacks you just played. That's why you have 3 wins in a row.
Right.
And I think that's certainly going to change when you face Ben Roethlisberger in the next couple of weeks, and then Jared Goff later on in the year.
Not even Roethlisberger anymore. Because I mean, how bad Big Ben's been this year?
He's been up and down, but he's still Big Ben. And
offensively, Pittsburgh. Sure.
They got nasty weapons.
But you look at it, the 2 times they've been challenged this year has been by Russell Wilson. And that's a game where the offense basically had its own way, so the defense didn't have to do too much. And then against Deshaun Watson in Houston on the road. Where
what do you think about Derek Carr though? I mean, they played pretty well against Derek Carr.
Played well against Derek Carr.
I mean, Derek Carr's pretty damn good, and they were healthy then. I don't think they're legit, but I think
my point is it's tough to be a vocal leader and be a. I mean, if you're not feeling like you can be top dog and get the job done, you got to get lunch pail and just shut up and get your find a way to get your job done. So, I think we're talking about and you know, you got to win games for your team at some point, and then you can puff the chest and be that. I mean, it's a catch-22, I guess, right? You have to do it to win. You have to have that in order to win.
Right.
Yeah,
it's the snake eating his tail there. I think you make a good point. I don't think they're a you know, they may win the division and call it a championship or whatever, but I wouldn't consider this a championship caliber defense. I think they've increased the talent level significantly since John Robinson took over as GM a couple, you know, 18 months ago, whatever it was. But I do, and I think you make a great point about the 2 names that I even mentioned there, that we've mentioned today, Kevin Byard and Adoree Jackson, have like a combined like 25 or 30 games in the NFL. Like, they've got to, you have to have more experience probably They clearly have the athletic ability, so the talent is there.
Well, here's a question.
They just need to grow into it.
When they play Kansas City or New England, do you have the confidence that they can stop those guys?
They stopped Kansas City last year. They went on the road and totally shut them down.
How about, okay.
I mean, that's
looking
weird.
At this season's defense, not last season's
I
defense.
I think they're better this year, though. That's what's weird. It's strange. I think they're better in the secondary, but I don't think they're as good at getting pressure on the quarterback, which they were very good at last year. Top five in the NFL at getting.
And with those two teams and those two quarterbacks, given the way they played this season, you got to get to them. I mean, Brady, obviously, is probably the best ever. If you don't get to him, you're going to get diced all day.
I think that if you lined up the Titans defense today against Andy Reid's offense right now and Tom Brady's offense right now, I would have very little faith in the defense getting stops routinely.
Well, and that's the answer.
You just said it right there. Your answer. Well, I and going back to being a Patriots fan, I remember, and I look at what I'm watching, is reminds me a little bit of like Tom Brady never went out, and I never felt like he went out and won games back in when he started. I felt like his job was not to lose games. You know, he wouldn't throw an interception. He just keep it methodic. And I think the Titans have a offense that should run the ball, eat the clock. Mariota's got to make a play when he needs to, but he doesn't have to go and shoot lights out to win. And I feel like if the defense can work off of that, that's where you win. I think I think it's with fantasy football, you're looking at numbers and everything. I think watching football games, it's got to work together. You got to put yourself in good field position, and your defense has got to be able to step up at some point, and your offense has got to step up at some point. So whether they're playing good teams or bad teams, the NFL is a tough league. You got to find a way to win. So maybe they are good. They're just they're finding their way.
And I think that's what's fast. Again, that's where I think two things can exist in your mind at once, which is very hard for people to sort of grasp in the modern media world, because there has to be like a definitive statement or a definitive headline. And those early Patriots teams, like, I bet you there wasn't, if you know, I was playing fantasy football back then, I bet you there weren't a lot of Patriots that were on fantasy teams in the 2000, 2001, no. 2002 years. You know, Tom kind of developed, and then by the next Super Bowl when they played, what it was, the Eagles and then the Panthers, you know, he was obviously a big-time star at that point. But those first couple of teams, there was nobody on that team you'd want on your fantasy roster.
Yeah, if you get good field,
it was all defense.
If you get good field position, you know, if you're the defense and the ball's on their 20, it's a lot easier to play than, hey, jump out on the red zone.
Yep, and the game has changed significantly since then as well. The game, the rules and everything, all geared towards the quarterbacks here as well. Got a special guest coming up in studio, going to join us. Really, really honored to have him. Ryan Leaf going to be here, and we're going to talk a lot about what he's doing. Coffee with the Coach coming up next hour as well. Hal Gill hanging out, filling in for Jason Fitz. My name's Braden Gall. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.